Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
It's the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
And the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul.
Okay, one of the big roller coaster teams this year to me has been the Denver Broncos. You could say there have been a lot of teams that seemingly were on a roller coaster, but the Broncos especially, because it all goes back to Sean Payton's big pronouncement that the Broncos last year were one of the worst coached teams in all of NFL history. I mean, it was a big statement and a huge slam.
He's not wrong. He just probably shouldn't have said it.
That's right. Nathaniel Hackett is the head coach of the Denver Broncos last year. That was a really tough situation, bad coaching, bad performance on the field. And so Sean Payton came along and spoke what I think he believed, but you're right. Discretion would have been
the bro code. He broke the bro code.
And so then fast forward a little while later, the Jets beat the Broncos, and Sean Payton has to eat humble pie because the Jets aren't very good, and yet they beat the Broncos. Humble pie additionally, the Broncos lose or give up 70 points to the Dolphins in a miserable, miserable outing. So first quarter of the season, it looked like the Broncos really were the most embarrassing franchise in the country, in the NFL, because of Sean Payton's comments and all of that. Now we look at it. Nathaniel Hackett is getting roasted as the offensive coordinator of the Jets.
And rightfully so.
And Sean Payton is riding a 5-game win streak. And the Bronco defense has elevated his play radically. Russell Wilson looks like they figured out how to use him. He's using his legs a little bit more. He's using more short passes. It's more like that Drew Brees offense in New Orleans. Do you think the Broncos have turned the corner? I mean, is this a team that has a shot to make the playoffs now?
Ooh, that is a tough question. Because I do think there's obviously been an improvement. I think it's really been run by the defense, because when you look at the play of Russell Wilson, like, for example, without Cortland Sutton, no, I don't think so. I really don't think so. And I want to say, I think Sean Payton is a great coach. I think most of the change in Russell Wilson is not because of Sean Payton. It's because he got humble pie shoved down his throat last year with that horrific season in Denver with Nathaniel Hackett, who was fired, you know, 5 games into the season. But Sean Payton came in, took away the special parking spots, took away the special office, and, you know, made Russell Wilson a regular guy, which was very important for the culture of that team. So I credit Sean Payton for that. I do think Sean Payton's a great football mind, but I think Russell Wilson's turnaround in play is, oh, wow, okay, I can't do what I used to do. I'm that much older. And I think the humility factor, that's another thing. But like a couple games ago, when they won on that last second crazy pass, Russell Wilson just hunked it into the end zone and Sutton caught it, you know, as he's falling out of bounds and there are two defenders in Russell Wilson's face. That was absolute luck. That was no skill of Russell Wilson's, but that was awesome. And hey, credit them. I'm not totally sure. I think next week against the Texans will be, I can't believe it, I'm saying that's going to be one of their toughest games. But I look at the wins that have come for Denver. Chicago, disaster. Green Bay, mostly a disaster. And then they come up and surprise people like Detroit. Kansas City, they got blown out the first game by Kansas City. Second game, hey, good for them. That was a great win. Buffalo, they're so inconsistent and they're below 500. Minnesota, they beat Josh Dobbs in his second game in Minnesota. And Cleveland, they beat him with Deshaun Watson out. So they're doing what they're supposed to do. So I don't know that I'm a full-on believer yet. So much better than last season, for sure. But I'm not sure if they're a playoff team. How do you feel?
Well, the Broncos sit at 6-5. As you noted, they will play the Texans, who are also 6-5. And that's a big game for positioning for the wild card. Both those teams, they're not going to win their division. They're two games back, both of them, against the division leaders. So this is a big game matchup this weekend. It'll be fun to watch. I think the Broncos and the Texans are very evenly matched. It will be a very competitive game. One thing that I might note, I think what's interesting to consider is that everybody thought the Broncos should be sellers at the trade deadline, and they were fielding calls for guys like Patrick Surtain and Cortland Sutton. They had those talented guys on that roster, but the Broncos held firm. They said, no, we're going to keep this nucleus together. We think we can win some games this year, and they've proven it out. So I do give some credit to them for turning that around to win five straight. There aren't a lot of teams in the NFL this year who've been able to string together five straight wins.
That's very true.
And to your point, it will be a telling game this weekend to see if they're going to be a team that can qualify for the wild card. That'll be very exciting to see. One team about whom there's no doubt will be in the playoffs is the Philadelphia Eagles, 10-1, and they got the big win yesterday over the Bills in what might have been the most exciting game of the weekend.
Wow.
With bad weather, tough conditions.
The most exciting NFL game. There were some good college ones
too. Oh, that was the most exciting NFL game, noted. But that game was striking to me because the Eagles have flirted with losses several weeks in a row here.
Oh, my gosh. They're slow starters.
They arguably could have lost to the Cowboys. They could have lost to the Chiefs. And the Bills had them on the ropes. I mean, Jalen Hurts drove them down. And look, it took a 59-yard field goal by Jake Elliott. I mean, it's interesting to compare. I heard a lot of people saying, well,
in the rain,
shame on the Texans for making it have to come down to or putting their kicker in a spot where they had to make a 58-yarder to tie the game. But the Eagles did the same thing. And how brilliant the Eagles are for sending out Jake Elliott to kick a 59-yarder and make the Eagles ultimately winners of that game. Look, both of those teams were sending out a kicker in what is a low probability kick.
Amen.
Elliott came through. What is the probability he's going to make it? Call it 30-40%. And I would say the same, maybe a little lighter for Amendola because he's newer to the league. He doesn't have the track record of Elliott. But those were low probability kicks. One went through, one did not. Eagles extended it, went into overtime, and Jalen Hurts was fantastic down the stretch. This Eagles team is impressive in so many ways. There just are very, very few weak spots on that team.
No, it's so true. In yesterday's game, I was surprised to see this. It was the first walk-off win of Hurts' career. You know, he's been with the Eagles 3 years now. And that really surprised me. But he had five total touchdowns yesterday. Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, after struggling at the beginning of the game, he was not Jalen Hurts. The Bills' defense seemed to have had him figured out. They were doing a great job stuffing that Eagles offense. Yet the Eagles have just found a way to work their way back into games, and they are the most proficient at sort of playing little
grinders
below their level, yet still coming out victorious in the end.
Yeah, it's not pretty. They're not pretty wins. And I think what we're seeing with Hurts, they're not, the Eagles are not, and especially Hurts, there's not explosive plays. You're not seeing a Miami type of offense.
Yeah.
You're seeing kind of death by a thousand cuts. They just keep grinding, which is so Hurts' personality, honestly. I mean, he leg presses 600 pounds, which is why the tush push or the brotherly shove works, because he's so strong. But you look at this. Do you know, the Eagles went into this season, they have the hardest strength of schedule in the NFL for this entire season. They are 10-1 in the toughest first half season of anyone. They have beaten the last five games: Miami, Washington, Dallas, Kansas City, and Buffalo.
Yeah, they've run through the toughest part of their schedule.
That's the last five
games.
Look,
a few weeks ago, I thought they were going to lose at least one or two of those, and the Cowboys could sneak into within one game, and the Cowboys do play them, and if the Cowboys were to win that one, then you'd have a real battle in the NFC East. But credit the Eagles, they've gone through that gauntlet, and they've gone through it well.
They got San Francisco coming into their house,
well,
and then they're going to
Dallas.
Dallas hasn't lost at home this season.
That's right.
So even the next 2 weeks are going to be tricky.
It is entirely possible they could lose the next two games, and then the Cowboys would be right there with them.
And but they're underdogs in both.
I tell you what, that 49ers matchup this weekend, I'm really looking forward to it because those two teams have separated them. I mean, the 49ers had that three-game losing streak, but when they were not in that funk, when they had their full roster, when Deebo Samuel was playing, when Trent Williams was on the team, they have looked so impressive, and that will be the matchup. Those two teams are probably the two best in the league right now.
And sure when you think of
the total roster talent, those two teams are really exceptional with the 49ers and the Eagles.
You want to hear a crazy stat?
Yeah.
So Philly is 16 of their last 17 games and 27 of the last 29, all regular season games.
Yep.
That's an amazing run.
Yeah, it's an incredible run.
I don't even think they look their best yet.
No, they've still got upside, I think. You know, it's interesting. You talk about the tush push. And one of the things that has been bothering me is everybody says, well, the Eagles are the only ones who can do it because they've got Jalen Hurts and his leg strength and his ability to do all these squats. And
his willingness to go in there. Did you ever see those things close up? Oh, geez.
Noted, but why aren't... So everybody says, so therefore the Eagles are the unique team who can do it. Why don't we just... Why doesn't another team just take a tight end, somebody who's got some athletic ability, put him at the quarterback position, take the snap, and let him run it? There are surely tight ends in this league or fullbacks in this league who have the leg strength of Jalen Hurts. It's not... Well, somebody will say, oh, but if you put a tight end under center, everyone knows what you're going to do. Well, pretty much everybody knows what the Eagles are going to do every time they run the tush push. There's no mystery about what's coming. It's coming right up the middle. It's coming power on power. So put another powerful person at the quarterback position if you're really going to run that play and signal to everyone that's the play you're going to run. And yet the notion is the Eagles are the only one who can do it. Why aren't other teams doing it and shortening the down and distance? I mean, the Eagles are able to say we feel like we've got a first and nine every series. That should be something that somebody can replicate.
No, it's so true, which means that there must be something I am missing because I agree with you. I mean, everyone sees it. They know when they're lining up. It's coming. They do it successfully. Why aren't 31 other teams adopting it? Something is amiss. Something I'm missing.
Well, I think in this offseason, this last offseason, there was a notion that, well, maybe the play will be banned from the league. Maybe it'll be ruled illegal, or maybe it won't be sustainable. I think this next offseason, there will be teams that will actually focus on it, develop it, and they'll put someone else in. They won't put Patrick Mahomes won't do it, but it'll be somebody like a tight end or a fullback who can run that play.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. I think it's fun.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk some college football.
Yes!
We're going to take a look at who deserves to be in the Final Four of the college football playoffs and the exciting championship matchups coming up. That next on Sports Map Radio.
This is The Boss
and The Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
This segment of The Boss and The Gloss is brought to you by our friends at Cricket. Shouldn't your phone say something about you? Make a statement and let your flip era unfold by switching to Cricket and getting the all-new Motorola Razr for $199.99. Smile, you're on Cricket.
Love it.
That made you smile, Carla.
It did make me smile.
I saw you burst when I said it. That's a good thing. Okay. There were some incredible college football
games over the weekend. Oh, with rivalry weekend. Not disappoint.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, where do you begin? Alabama, Auburn, Michigan, Ohio State. But let's begin with the Michigan-Ohio State game because that's a huge game with big implications for both of those programs. Very exciting game. Michigan with the win.
And, you know, it was an emotional win, of course. It was Harbaugh's last game on suspension. And, honestly, I didn't think it was that exciting of a game. It was close, for sure, and an interception sealed it at the end for Michigan. But, you know, Ryan Day is like 0-3 against Michigan, and it's really rough. It's rough for Ohio State. It's great for Michigan. And that fan base came in droves, and, I mean, I think Ohio State's out.
So
it's done.
You don't think there's any way that they can get back into the college football playoffs? It's hard to imagine because they don't get to play again.
Exactly.
Right? So Michigan will go on to the Big Ten championship game. They're going to play Iowa, and that's not the hardest matchup they could face, right? So
Number 17, Iowa.
Yes.
And they're number two.
So presuming that Michigan beats Iowa, Michigan is obviously in. And it's just hard to see how Ohio State works their way back in. I suppose if Georgia were to lose, then that would open up a spot. And Georgia would be a one-loss team. I don't know. I'm trying to come up with scenarios for Ohio State, but it's not likely.
Other pieces have to fall.
They'd have to count on a lot of people to lose.
And I said 0-3. That's not correct. Ryan Day is 1-3 against Michigan. And get ready for this. 40-0 versus the rest of the Big Ten.
Well, I mean, Michigan's a pretty good team, and there they sit. I mean, I'm sure you heard it. There were people arguing that Ryan Day should be fired.
Right.
And 1-3 against Michigan. I mean, if he won yesterday, it would have been 2-2. I mean, he could have won on Saturday. I mean, it wasn't like they weren't in that game. So it's hard for me to see a program so successful as Ohio State is right now. And they've recruited a lot of great players. A lot of great players are coming out of Ohio State, going into the NFL. There's a trajectory. There's a momentum about that program. It's hard for me to see firing Ryan Day. But he is on the hot seat right now.
Well, it's tricky when that's your biggest game of the season and you've won 25% of the time, you know, with 1-3. But, you know, I'll tell you, and I know people don't want to talk about it, this whole situation, the sign-stealing situation with Michigan, how much has that benefited Michigan? Really, we don't really know because you can't put anything exact on that. But I'll tell you what I do not care for. I think Jim Harbaugh is a brilliant coach. I don't think he needed to do this. Just as much we're sitting here in Houston, the Astros are an ultra-talented team. They didn't need to do that. So I'm not being a homer. I'm just like, wow, why'd you do it? Stop the victim card. Free Harbaugh.
Free Harbaugh.
What? Free. It's not free. He was paying Connor Stallions and company to go do the things. You are not the victims, Michigan. The athletes are. They didn't ask for this scheme. So, you know, I feel badly for them. But no. No tears for Jim Harbaugh. Not at all. So I feel a little bad. I'm a little salty if I'm Ryan Day that how much did that affect Michigan's seeding? And yeah, Michigan's talented. Come on. But I don't know. I wouldn't like it if I was Ryan Day. But
well,
it
Michigan,
is what it is.
Michigan's sort of a consensus number two behind Georgia now.
Yeah.
And they will beat Iowa. So they should be in the college football playoff. Now, well, let's talk Georgia. They're going to have to face Alabama, and that's a really tough SEC matchup. Now, Alabama barely beat Auburn yesterday. What a great rivalry game that is. Every
did
year.
Did you see that
the
ending?
The Iron Bowl always delivers, does it not? It's just always so good.
That was incredible. That was my favorite game of the whole weekend, NFL and college. That was my favorite. I mean, a 6-5 Auburn team, Alabama at 10-1 at that point comes in and to Auburn, and I was like, there's just no way they're going to win. There, it just can't happen. And you saw that last drive where there were a lot of mistakes where Jalen Milroe, Alabama's quarterback, went over the line of scrimmage, like 4 yards over, loss of down. Then the snap went over his head, 15 yards back. But then this is why Auburn is a 6-5 team. Hugh Freeze made some really questionable defensive calls where, did you see how much time Jalen Milroe had back there?
Yeah, they didn't rush anybody.
Twice. So, wow. I don't know. I'm not on the gridiron, but that was phenomenal.
Well, it was interesting because they really had two rushers and one spy on Jalen Milroe. And one thing that I thought about, particularly on that last play, it was 4th and forever, 4th and goal.
Yeah.
He had to throw
it to Isaiah Bond, the 32-yarder.
The last play, yes. On that last play, there was a spy, a person waiting to see if Jalen was going to run the ball. But from that part of the field, you don't need a spy. Rush the guy or drop him to coverage.
There was no pressure on him at all.
He was just hovering around watching to see if Jalen was going to run.
Yeah.
And that was too far a distance to try to run. So I would have thrown all those three guys full bore at the rush and maybe even thrown a fourth or maybe in a fifth. Because obviously you put the pressure on. Shoot, it takes time for receivers to get all the way down that field. But to let him stand there and wait and wait and wait till he found a little window.
Two drives in a row. Two series in a row.
Right.
The first time I was like, what are they doing?
Yep.
And then they did the exact same thing again.
Yep.
And I thought, well, Hugh, this is why you're not winning this game. So, wow, is that.
So it always seems to happen. Early in the season, Alabama struggles a bit. They're not shaping into form as fast as everyone would think.
Jalen Milroe was benched, remember
that? Jalen Milroe was benched. They've had some struggles. They had struggles in the early going. They lost to Texas, which really when they had that loss, nobody really looked at the Longhorns as that impressive a team, et cetera. I think the Longhorns have elevated their standing a bit now. But back then, that seemed like a really bad loss. And yet, here they come. They sneak their way back into consideration. And if they're just one win away from being in the college football playoff. Now, it's a big win they've got to come up with, but they are one win away. This is where Nick Saban wants them. He wants them in that SEC championship game where they can win and go into the CFP.
No, it's a crazy matchup. And honestly, a really exciting matchup, not because Georgia's number one, but these two staffs are interchangeable. They go over and about. They know each other so well. I mean, Kirby Smart was Nick Saban's defensive coordinator for years. But there is a lot of movement between those two staffs, those programs. And so I think that adds something that the normal sport fan wouldn't know, that there is so much strategy and so much familiarity with the two programs. It's not necessarily going to be a Georgia rundown. I mean, I don't know. I think that's something to think about.
Well, I think that championship game is going to be very competitive, and that's what makes this so intriguing. And we could have mayhem on the other side of championship weekend.
Because
when you really look, if Alabama wins a close game over Georgia, there'll be calls that maybe both of them should go into the CFP, but then that's a really heavy SEC feel. And what happens then if Washington wins out here? They come undefeated. They certainly could put a flag in the ground and say, we deserve, as the Pac-12 champion, to be in this CFP.
So, and then you have an outstanding Oregon team. And I mean, and for once, the Pac-12 is relevant. They have been the conference that could be forgotten easily.
Right.
So, yeah.
No, lots, so a Pac-12 champion, a Big Ten champion, those guys are probably going to get in. You get the SEC champion, it almost assuredly gets in. And that sort of leaves just one spot. And if Georgia defeats Alabama and Alabama falls out, then there's this opening. And then the question is, who gets to sneak in there? Longhorns, University of Texas Longhorns, if they win the Big 12, are going to say, we're the Big 12 champs. We have one loss on the season, and we beat Alabama. We are entitled to be that fourth team.
Sure, they will. Yeah, they'll be making a case for that.
It'll be fascinating to watch. Look, before we end the segment, I really wanted to, under the headline of college football, talk about the University of Houston deciding to let go of Dana Holgorsen. He, of course, came in from West Virginia with lots of fanfare. University of Houston Cougars moved into the Big 12. There was lots of expectations about what they could do. But now Holgorsen's out, and the tenure really wasn't that impressive. Were you surprised that they made the decision at this time?
I'm impressed that they made the decision at this time because they've got a school that really understands the importance of athletics to help the entire university, and they've done everything they can to do it. He's had three losing seasons in the 5 years in charge of U of H, overall 31-28, more than the win and loss records. That's how it's been done. Overtime loss to Tulane. They lost to Rice. And he blames his coaches and players and pressers. It's not good. They did the right thing. It needs to happen.
All right, the Cougars will be looking for a new coach. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Brooke Bentley. She's joining us in studio. She has a novel entitled Sideline Confidential, and we'll learn about her experiences or the experiences of her story as a woman in sports media. That up next here on Sports Map Radio.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
All right, it's that time of year where I am struggling with what to give Carla for Christmas. And I spent a lot of time thinking about this. It's not easy.
Well, I like that. Spend a lot of time. It's good.
Well, I'm looking for an amazing gift. And so what I've done, I've decided, I'm going to go to Total Wine and More. Because at Total Wine and More, you will find gifts for everyone on your list. They have the lowest prices, and they've had the lowest prices for over 30 years. You'll always find what you love, and you will love what you find at Total Wine and More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21, but get a gift at Total Wine and More. That'll make you happy, right, Carla?
Make me happy. Bring it.
We're always trying to keep Carla happy.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what is making
it's
Carla
not
happy.
Easy.
Well, what's making Carla happy right now is that we have Brooke Bentley in the studio with us, and that's exciting. She just brought in a copy of her book. It has been newly released. It is called Sideline Confidential. And Brooke, we are delighted to have you here. Welcome in.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Carla. This is so much fun to be with my old pal, David, that I worked with a long time ago in this very studio. I feel like I'm back home.
This is like reunion.
It is.
Well,
I
so
love it.
As context, tell our listeners about your personal experience before we get to the book, because you do have some time here at Gal Media. You've had some time with the Texans. You've been in sports media for a while. Tell everybody what you've done.
You're an award-winning sports reporter. We want to hear it.
Yes.
So it all started with the Houston Texans. Actually, you know what? Back it up. It started with USC. Carla, I went to USC.
Fight on.
I went to journalism school there, and I got a job right out of journalism school with the Houston Texans. And I just so happened to be from Houston. So it was like this perfect world of colliding. I got to work for an NFL team in my hometown. And that's when they were really bringing in media in-house. So you now know the Texans own the rights for the radio broadcast and, you know, television shows and whatnot. That was all happening when I was working there. And so a lot of it started on the web. So on the website, and we would do a lot of web programming, sort of mini TV shows. And that's what I did. And I was really young and kind of naive and not really sure what I was doing. But I was very lucky that they put me in this position. And I kind of figured a lot out as I went, and also had some very good mentors. I learned from some really high level people. So I was very lucky there. And I got to do things like go to Pro Bowls, go to the Super Bowls. I worked for the NFL in media at Super Bowls. I went to scouting combine, so I learned a lot. And
that's
really
living the dream right
there. I mean,
there.
Right. And you're like young in your mid-20s right out of school. And so after that, then I really wanted anchor desk experience. And so I wanted to be close to Houston, and I went to Beaumont and was the first female sports anchor for the Fox affiliate in Beaumont. And then I came
breaking
back here.
Breaking barriers,
Brooke.
I love it.
Well, let me just say.
Breaking barriers in Beaumont. How many B's can we have there?
No.
Brooke breaking barriers in Beaumont.
Well, she did. I mean, look, I Beaumont, Texas, for those of our listeners who have never been to Beaumont, it's a nice place to stay for a very, very short time. Right?
I mean, maybe a pit stop for a Diet Coke.
Don't stay too long in Beaumont, Texas.
But
you were building your resume. You were developing your skills.
I wanted anchor desk experience.
Yep.
And so that's why I went there. And I wanted to be close to Houston. And it you know, checked those boxes.
So I
did it. And as soon as my 2 years were up on my contract, I was right back in Houston. And that's when I got a job with Gal Media. And it was really just sort of perfect timing.
See, now, you know, on this show, I'm the boss and she's the gloss. I'm still the boss then. So, I mean, you worked for me for a little while. So I just want to highlight my status here.
He likes to remind us, Brooke, that he's
I like
the boss.
To remind everybody, but nobody pays attention to it. So,
I pay attention.
Thank you. Yeah, you behave sometimes. Yeah,
most of the time. I try.
So you had a good run here at Gal Media. What inspired you to write the book Sideline Confidential?
So after Gal Media, I was sideline reporting, and I had my first son. I think I worked a game 8.5 months pregnant, and I was doing a college football game that was at NRG, and the Texans were away, and I was walking up and down the field, and a cannon went off, and I wasn't prepared, and I literally thought I was going to wet my pants.
You went into labor.
And the producer in my ear said, that would be so cool if you had your baby on the sidelines. You would make ESPN's top 10. I'm like, no, that wouldn't be cool. Like, I would like not to have my baby on the sidelines of a football game. Then I had my son, and I got back to work after 6 weeks of maternity leave, and someone told me at work, you know, oh gosh, you still have a lot of baby weight. I thought you would be skinnier than that. And I just started crying. I thought, men don't have to deal with this. This job of sideline reporting is so much harder for women. And you know, schedule wise, you work nights, weekends, holidays. I missed my son walking for the first time. I was in Louisiana for a football game, and I got inspired to write this book. And so I thought, I'm going to do this on my time off. But between being a mom to a little baby and working,
you have time
there
off?
Was no time
my
off.
Gosh.
So I wrote it in bits and pieces and got the story out. And I just wanted to show how hard it is for young women to break in this industry and be taken seriously, and the different barriers that they have to break in order to really succeed. And I mean, Carla, obviously you've done it. You've seen it all. You've been through it. It's not easy.
It's not easy. And It's very challenging. And what I want to ask you, Brooke, because in your book, I think you do, I've read a little bit of parts of it and I can't wait to get into it more, but you really give a great glimpse into the challenges that women face in professional sports in a male-dominated industry. Do you think now, from the time that you first started with the Texans, and as you mentioned, in the anchor job in Beaumont and all that, do you think from then to now, has there been progress? Is it enough? And where do you see this going? Or is this just pie in the sky?
I think there's been progress. I mean, you see people like Doris Burke and what she's done in the NBA with play-by-play coverage. And, you see so many accomplished women on the sidelines who've been able to stay there for a long time. And it's a hard industry for longevity. Lisa Salters comes to mind.
Yeah, she's another one.
Yeah, I mean, she's a pro's pro. So I definitely think there's been progress. But what was interesting to me is that I originally wrote this book to be about 2010, like when I worked for the Texans. And then everything came out in Washington, D.C. with what had been going on with the Commanders now, the then Redskins.
Dan Snyder,
the toxic culture, the cheerleaders, propositioning cheerleaders. And an agent told me, she said, you can make this book current because look what's happening right now in Washington, D.C. And I said, you know what? You're right. This is actually the scandals that I wrote about in my book mirror what happened in D.C. And I actually talked to people who were involved there. And one of them said, I'm sorry, this was hard for me to read because I have PTSD from what happened. Mm. And you really achieved. You wrote exactly what happened to several of my colleagues. And she's like, and I don't know that I can even read this. And I didn't. I knew some of the story, but not, I mean, not firsthand. And so the fact that that was still very current, and that's when I was writing the novel. So I kept it present time.
We are talking to Brooke Bentley, who is in studio with us, and she is the author of a book called Sideline Confidential. You can find it on Amazon, Sideline Confidential. Okay, this is not an autobiography. It's not a firsthand account of your own experiences. You've got a fictitious character who plays the part, but I have to believe you've built a lot of this story on your own experiences or things you witnessed.
Most definitely. Yeah. I mean, listen, I had to make this juicy. There's some steam and some juice because I want to sell books, right?
Sure.
You got to have some of that in there. But it does draw on some of my life experiences. And when I first started working for the Texans, which I keep forgetting, is I think it's 2007 was my first year. I was told that I couldn't ride the bus with the players and coaches on game days because my then boss was worried I would distract the team, and I was the first female to travel with the team. And he just said, you're not in our routine. And we thrive on routine, and we don't have females on our bus, so we just can't do it. Mm. And I was very shocked because I thought these players play in front of 70,000 fans screaming, cheerleaders who are,
scantily
dancing,
clad,
and very little clothes.
Twerking
next to them.
Right, like, on their sideline. Like,
how
what
can
in the world?
Me and my cheap, express suit be that distracting? But, I rode a different bus. And then as the team got to know me, that all changed. But the idea stuck with me that I was asked to ride my own bus. So that could happen to another woman in the league. And that's why I wanted to open the book with that scene of the lead character being asked to ride her own bus.
Can I say, it's the one man in this conversation that I find sort of interesting. On the one hand, if you're really attractive, wow, take another bus because you're going to distract the players. On the other hand, if you come back not having lost the weight that you're supposed to lose, oh my goodness, you don't look ready to go out there. You lose either way. It's a really tough fine line to be a female reporter in that kind of scenario.
You nailed it, David. And that's really what I wanted to show, is that you need to be pretty but not sexy. There's that fine line.
Yeah, fine line.
And you need to know a lot, but don't know more than the men in the room. And I felt that I really had to walk that tightrope. And it was interesting for me, especially working for an NFL team. And, granted, this isn't just about the Texans, because like I said, I worked for the NFL in different media situations. So I really got to know women from other teams, personnel from other teams. I worked 2 Super Bowls. I worked a Pro Bowl. So, I mean, I was there with other team personnel and got to see those personalities, and each team is very different in how they're run, especially
cultures,
the Redskins, which is why Dan Snyder got the boot.
No kidding.
All right, she is Brooke Bentley. Her book is Sideline Confidential. We're going to have her next segment, and we're going to talk a little football, a little Texans, a little other things, USC football perhaps. That up next here on Sports Map Radio.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And Carla and I are joined in studio by Brooke Bentley. She's the author of Sideline Confidential, a great story about a woman navigating her way into a very male-dominated world of sports media. And before we move on from that, you know, one of the things you said is, yeah, you wanted to dress up the story. You put some titillating items in there that would turn some heads. What's the sort of most head-turning thing that you put in there? What would be telling an audience, oh, you better read this section of the book? What should we know?
Well, there is a flirtation sort of romance. I won't give too much away.
Now you've got my attention right now.
Between the heroine, Blake, and the backup quarterback. And this was all made up. I mean, I had no romance with any quarterback. And I saw John McClane, the former Chronicle writer.
Right.
Yeah, and he loved the book. And he's been nothing but amazing. He's helped me promote it. And he said, I know who you're talking about. And I said, John, I made that up. He goes, no, I know which quarterback that was. And I was like, no, John, please don't tell people that. There was no quarterback. Like,
right.
That did not happen.
Right.
He said, oh, you can tell me. We'll talk later.
Well, you can tell me. I'm the media. I won't tell anybody.
I thought, oh, no, people actually think that was me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give too much away, but there's some romance builds, and then you find out there's another part of his life. And so anyways, there's a lot of drama there, but that did not happen. And people think that people have ideas and they'll keep saying, well, okay, maybe one of the quarterback, but it was this player. And I'm like, no, it's not.
This is good, Brooke, because you know what?
Made up.
That's promotion. That's good. You got people talking.
Well, no, it is promotion,
great.
But it underscores the problem, right?
Well, that's
instead of talking
exactly.
about your real reporting, they want to know, whom did Brooke know? What player did she have a relationship with? All that kind of drama.
Well, that's a good point.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it was that I think is the part that people have asked me about the most.
Sure.
Like, which quarterback was it? Then they go through the list of Texans quarterbacks and I keep saying, none of them. This did not. It's a fiction story. It did not happen to me.
Right.
Just don't
right.
say Deshaun Watson because that would be real
okay,
bad.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
So if we make a movie out of this book, Sideline Confidential, Brooke Bentley in studio, she's the author. Who's going to play you?
Oh, gosh.
Why not you?
Well, I think I'm too old. I've aged out of that.
I'm not seeing any age
okay,
on you here.
You, Carla.
Police. I could be Brooke's grandmother.
Oh,
so that's
goodness. All right. Do you have anybody to play your part?
Well, so I keep saying a younger Jessica Biel because actually right now I have a manager who's taken it to a few production companies.
Good.
So Hello Sunshine is looking at it right now. We'll see what happens. It's
fingers crossed. That's exciting.
Well, yeah. But I think everyone's giving their scripts and books and everything to Hello Sunshine, Reese Witherspoon's production company.
Yes.
So we'll see. I mean, it's a long shot, but they did ask me to write down, you know, the top three people. Well, I felt was like, oh my goodness, I need someone athletic and someone who, you know, pretty, but like I wanted someone also to look wholesome and not, I hate to say this, but like taller because she's a volleyball player in the book, and so she went to USC and played volleyball there, and so I thought, I actually was looking up the heights and like, you know, I felt sort of silly
USC,
looking at this
it's
all
like over 6 feet.
I know.
Well over.
I know. And yeah. So I felt sort of silly looking all this up for different actresses out there. But I have a short list of people that, you know, it's like, you know, a few people who've played like superhero roles, things like that, that you probably wouldn't know particularly well. But
it's exciting.
It's something
it's
I'm if you have an idea, David, I would really love to hear it.
Well, honestly, she's too old, but Sandra Bullock would have come to mind.
That's the first person they said.
Well, yeah, because you look a bit like Sandra.
Yes,
and I can see how that would fit. But yes, she's now aged out.
They said, and there's a mentor role, and they said we would see Sandra in this book or in this movie. Mm. She seems like the mentor in the book.
That would be a
and
good
I thought,
idea.
Actually, that
I like
really
that.
Works. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, it's not every day that I'm sitting between two Trojans. I've got both of you guys went to USC and had high expectations coming into the football season. Lincoln Riley, Caleb Williams, all that excitement. Mm-hmm. And then both of you were saying how disappointed you were. High expectations, very mediocre results. What do you want out of USC right now? What do you guys hope to have happen this offseason to position USC for more success?
They have to get a defensive coordinator, period.
And defensive players. In that scheme,
yes.
Whatever scheme they end up running, because there's no defense.
No. And, you know, they actually tried to do that, Brooke, after, you know, that horrific ending to last season. Caleb Williams wins the Heisman. He's got all the talent. They lose the Pac-12 championship to a very physical Utah team, get completely outplayed. And then lose to Tulane in the Cotton Bowl? Like, Tulane is a formidable program, yes, but they are not a power
five.
They're
not USC.
They are not USC. And the fact, when I
They don't
really,
have Heritage Hall with all these Heisman, a storied program of Heisman winners.
Exactly. They do not have a building to house all their Heismans, that's for sure. But, you know, when I was the most frustrated, and David is like, oh, my gosh, she's a broken record. It's the Grinch who stole Christmas. Alex Grinch stole a national championship or a chance at a national championship for USC. And when Lincoln Riley doubled down on him after the Cotton Bowl to bring him back this season, I thought, I go back to the Big 12. You were terrible then. No one played defense in the Big 12. What makes you think you can do this again? So to me, it's really on Lincoln Riley. He's the CEO of this. Tell me something different. Tell me something. Tell me your
thoughts. I mean, that's what I said. Really, when we sat down, we were talking off of air. It was that I've been so disappointed in Lincoln Riley because he thought he could just outscore every team. And it's almost like, really? You think that you're that arrogant where you think you can just go out there? And you, like you said, they were really outmanned in a physical way. I mean, USC used to have some very stout defenses. And you're like, okay, after Utah beats you in the Pac-12 championship, you're just going to let teams steamroll over you?
That's what's happened.
And that's what's happened. And it's not a good look for USC.
And, you know, it's a worse look is the effort, you know, because they did go into the portal. I will give them that. They kept the Grinch, but they went into the portal, got some good defensive players. But watching them, as I know you would too, Brooke, it's like, oh, missed a tackle. The effort was barely there. I said, that's uncoaching. This is awful.
You would just wonder what the coaching culture is then.
Right.
On the defensive side.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
They will definitely have a new defensive coordinator next year because Alex Grinch, your guy, the Grinch who stole Christmas, he's gone. So better days ahead, hopefully, for USC for both of you guys.
But no Caleb Williams.
And Caleb Williams will be gone. They got to rebuild on that. But let's shift to Brooke. We got Brooke Bentley in here with us. She's the author of Sideline Confidential, and you covered the Texans for a long time. How impressed are you by CJ Stroud and D'Amico Ryans and the trajectory of the team today?
Oh, wow. I mean, first, the D'Amico hire was so, I want to say it's franchise changing for
them.
Did you know him during your time on the sidelines?
I went to a Pro Bowl that he went to.
Did you see then the leadership or the innate qualities that made you think he could be a head coach in the league someday?
Oh, yes. Mm. You know, he was a very smart student, too. It was like, you know, straight A student pretty much in college. And he was a natural leader, but always positive, just a really great person. And he had that effusive energy and always a smile on his face. And the other defensive players really seemed to gravitate towards him. So he was a defensive captain. He was a leader on the team and just an all-around really good person. I mean, you just couldn't say a bad thing about D'Amico Ryans. And that hire was huge for the Texans because obviously other teams wanted him. So to bring him back to Houston and to have youthful energy. I mean, because they needed that. They needed to inject the team with that. They needed something
toxic.
It was toxic, yeah. And CJ, I mean, they even had a franchise quarterback, really. I mean, obviously, Deshaun Watson was there, you thought, and then everything exploded off the field, too. But CJ Stroud, he's so poised.
That's,
I mean,
that's
it's unbelievable.
You're right.
And even when you hear him in his post-game interviews, I mean, he is very humble. He keeps it in perspective. I was at a lunch with someone who went to Ohio State, is very involved in their program, and she said, she's in California, and she said, I am the big fan of the Texans because of CJ Stroud. She said, I will always follow his career. He's an outstanding person. But he's also just in pressure moments, he's fun to watch. You know, he has that it factor. He does.
Poised. You just see the poise all the time.
And you're like, okay, I want the ball in his hands when you're driving down the field, 2-minute drill. They need to score, you know, a touchdown or kick a field goal to win the game. And he's been able to do it and deliver in his first year in the league. It's unbelievable.
He does not look like a rookie.
He doesn't.
I mean, he's the first rookie to have 5 consecutive games with over 300 yards passing. Like, it's just insane what he is doing. And it's not like there's a lot of weapons around him. There are some. But there's a rookie quarterback with a rookie head coach with a rookie offensive coordinator and play caller. And this is the result we're getting in Houston. Like, we haven't been this excited in years.
Right. And, you know, I guess it was 2 games ago when he had, was it 3 interceptions, a 3 interception game?
Yep.
Well, you just see them, he bounces. Okay, they didn't win against the Jaguars, but he's able to recover from that, and he's able to still put a game together, and so not completely implode, because you're used to the, like, okay, the Texan quarterback throws an interception. Okay, this game is just going to go down the toilet. And it's not what happens with him. Like, he comes back believing, and you can see that in the offense.
And you think about that. I mean, he's had 5 interceptions on the season. Josh Allen has 14.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Well, we've had a great visit here. Brooke Bentley, thank you so much for coming in. If you want to get her book, it's Sideline Confidential. You can find it on Amazon.
I can't wait.
Brooke, thank great you, to have you here. Coming up next, it's going to be Anthony Pepe and the Diehards, and he's going to have 2 special guests on the Diehards, Carla and David. We'll be on there with Anthony in just a few minutes. You've been listening to The Boss and the Gloss on Sports Map Radio.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your 2 free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your 2 free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.